Welcome to Dave Ramsey's Entree Leadership Podcast. This is the place to learn what Dave Ramsey and his team teach about leadership and business. On today's show, we've got a special guest right here in the studio. We're going to hear some great stuff, so I'm positive you are going to enjoy this. Who am I? My name is Chris Licurdo. I have been with Dave Ramsey now for 11 years, and I have had the fantastic opportunity to teach these principles, entree leadership principles, financial principles, helping people to change the way they run their business, change the way they run their lives. I teach the three-day entree leadership here in Nashville and am a part of the week-long entree leadership that we do around the country with Dave, where Dave teaches a week-long event. It is absolutely incredible. We bring our leadership team down to be a part of that as well. This podcast, we hope, is helping you. We are getting a lot of comments already. We are getting a lot of feedback. As a matter of fact, it has been the number one download on iTunes, period, in the business section. It has gotten to number two on the overall podcast. Oh my gosh. And that is because of you. That is because of our listeners. And let me tell you, we are so stoked that you guys are on board. We are having a blast hearing the comments. Comment after comment on Twitter, through email. We're hearing how much you are absolutely loving this. And we want you to continue to do exactly that. How can you do that? How can you be a part of this podcast? There's a couple of ways you can do that. The first thing you can do is follow us on Twitter. At Entree Leadership. That is at E-N-T-R-E Leadership. You can also do it through email, which is podcast@entreeleadership.com. Now, here's what we want, folks. We want to hear what you think. We want to hear if you think this is good, if this is helping, just small comments about it's great, or, hey, you know, that guy stinks. Whatever it is, we want to hear it. But we also want your questions as well. We know that you have things that you want answered. We want to be able to answer those. We're going to answer some of those throughout the podcast as we go along, and we're going to answer a lot of those also on my blog at chrislicurdo.com. So make sure that you're sending those to us at Entree Leadership on Twitter, or the guys in the booth, they're loving that one, or podcast@entreeleadership.com. All right, I am excited about today's show. Normally, we've got some great teaching from Dave. We've got a great interview with somebody who's an incredible leader in the business world. Today, we're going to combine that. The man himself, Dave Ramsey. What's going on, man?
I actually get to be on my own podcast.
You get to be on your own podcast. It's crazy.
This is cool.
And we've got you here because we've got something special that's coming out. You have got a brand new book, Entree Leadership, that is coming out September 20th. Not just a book, but a tour, events, everything that's wrapped around this. I know you're excited.
We are jacked. This is so fun. It's a project we've been working on for, gosh, a year and a half as far as the book itself goes. Writing the book, the marketing plans, laying everything out, you know, putting the whole process together, the strategic thought, the tactical aspects of it, and now the actual launch of the book. And it's material that's so rich because it's the way we've run our business from day one.
It's stuff that you started teaching us as team members years ago. You sat down and you started thinking to yourself, what do I want my leaders to know? We took it from there, made it something that we teach now around the country. Mm-hmm. We teach it here. We do all kinds of events. But it all really started 20 years ago with you in a card table in your house. What was that like, starting your business before it became what it is now? We've got 300 team members. You know, you're a national brand. We've got all this stuff going on. What was it like 20 years ago starting this from a card table?
It was a lot harder. You know, honestly, I mean, I'm kind of spoiled these days. I've kind of got it made. The travel that we do is a lot different. We used to drive everywhere in the old broken down cars and stay in flea bag motels. And, you know, and so once you kind of get the thing to where it's making a little bit of money and you've got some quality people around you, the whole process to help you do the lifting, the process gets easier. So I don't relish the good old days. They weren't that great. Uh-huh. I don't wish it was like it used to be. I probably work more hours now, but I don't. It's not as mentally draining. It's not as physically draining because I've got such good people around me that you know, if I get tired of holding a particular bucket of water, I've got somebody to hand it to. And you know, the level of delegation, the level of great ideas around here that have nothing to do with my mind is wonderful. And when you're a lone ranger, when you're by yourself starting something, you know, all the heavy lifting is done by you. All the light lifting is done by you. I think it's emotionally exhausting for the person first starting out. Yeah. And so if somebody's listening to us and they're at that stage, you know, they're one or two or three person company and you find yourself emotionally fatigued, let me tell you, that's kind of normal at that stage. And you do have something to look forward to. It is worth it to grow the business later to a larger situation where you've got better people around you and better resources around you.
I definitely would say we stay at better hotels. I remember pulling up to many of them with the barbed wire running around the hotel. I don't know if you can even call it a hotel back in those days. But it
looked like a prison yard. Yeah, it did.
Definitely worth it. Definitely worth the effort. I think there's a lot of people that are listening, and you know, we talk to a lot of these leaders around the country at our events and everything, and you get this question a lot on air of somebody saying, hey, listen, I'm starting my business. It's a part-time business right now. And we've seen people making the mistake of leaving money, leaving something that's putting food on their table early to jump in and take their part-time business to a full-time business. When is the right time, if somebody's out there getting it going, getting it started, they've got the card table in their house, when's the right time to go from that to a full-time business?
You know, our culture has taught us to be self-actualizers. It's taught us that we're important, we should dream, we should live our dreams, and we have a right to do that. And there's almost a hedonistic selfishness to that, that in my selfish desire to be all that I can be, which is not a bad desire, but when it's, you know, when it's all about that, you can leave your family in a lurch, and you can actually put yourself in a mess. And John Acuff's book Quitter, he addresses this very head on. The whole book, the whole thesis of the book is about how to make your day job your dream job. I mean, how to make your new job your dream job without, you know, leaving the day job immediately. And so the analogy I always use is, you know, if you're ready to, you've got your business started and you think you're ready to quit your day job and go full time into business, make sure the boat is close enough to the dock that when you jump towards the boat that you can make it.
You hit fiberglass.
Yeah, exactly. Because you're going to bounce off. You're going to get wet. There's going to be blood and bruises. It's not good. Don't do that. And so I think what happens is there's some people jump. There's not even a boat pulling up. They just get wet. They're just like, I'm doing this. And, you know, we didn't do that with this business. Right. I was doing real estate deals after I went broke, back to doing real estate. Just to eat, because that was a way to put food on the table. And I had gotten my income back up into six figures. I made $120,000-something the last year I did real estate. And the first year we did full-time financial piece, I made $62,000. Mm-hmm. My income went in half. Now, we had calculated that, and we could tell it wasn't a leap. It was a, you know, we knew that we had made like $46,000 or $48,000, you know, quote, doing it part-time with some speaking and some counseling and a little bit of this and a little bit of that, just trying a little bit of radio stuff we were doing and that kind of thing, and we added it all up, and it was $48,000, and we can't take a pay cut that far.
Right.
But we knew if we worked really, really hard and went full-time, we could get that 48 up to something. It didn't go up as far as we had hoped, but it went to $62,000 that first year, and so basically my pay went in half. And my wife's going like, you know, financial what? Financial peace? I don't get the part where we get that. So, you know, whoa, we just went broke and then we started making a little money and now we're went in half again. It's turned out okay, but we didn't go from $120,000 to hoping.
Right.
We went from $120,000 to $62,000, having based that on $48,000. And so you've got to have the boat close enough to be able to make the leap into the boat.
Right, knowing that you can actually get there with something. I was on a call today with one of our Entree alumni. I get the chance to talk to a bunch of those guys after the event, which is great. And one of the things he had mentioned was, sitting through Entree Leadership, it was great for him to hear mistakes that we've made. Because he's sitting there going, man, you know, I feel like I'm the only idiot out here who's making mistakes in his business. You talk a lot about mistakes inside the book. Why is that?
I have never met anyone who is a big success in business or in ministry or running an organization, a big success in leadership, that aren't unbelievable failures.
Yeah.
I mean, they have failed at scale that most people never dream of living at. and some of the mistakes that they've made, some of the errors that they made, and survive that. Many, you know, we've all read the stories of people who've gone even bankrupt two or three times before they became successful. Or, you know, the Abraham Lincoln story of the number of times he failed before he was ever even elected at an office. Mm-hmm. And those kinds of things. And the never quit story is what that comes down to. I think the only people who go from zero to success without multiple failures along the way are someone that exists in a talent pool of some kind. You know, you take someone like a Carrie Underwood,
right.
You know, who, you know, she's on the Fox thing with the, what's that called? I can't think of the name of it.
The American Idol.
American Idol. Okay. She wins American Idol. And so she goes from that. And obviously she works very hard, and obviously she's got a great talent, but this is not this is not someone who failed for 15 years.
Right.
To become that, because she's got this inordinate world-class talent. And so she was able to do that. Most of us don't have the Carrie Underwood ability. Most of us, like me, I mean, I've worked my butt off for 15 years. I've done so many stupid things. I'm convinced for most of us in business that the gleaming, shining mountain of success is actually a pile of garbage. You just happen to be standing on it instead of laying under it.
Right.
And I we see that in our own personal lives. You know, I watch people parenting. I watch this in our marriage. You know, you ought to be getting better.
Right.
And John, my friend John Maxwell wrote a book that I just love the thesis of it. The title of the book is called Failing Forward. Just to remind us that most people fail. Now, the trick is to do as Tim Sanders says, is don't make the same mistake twice. And then the other trick is learn from your mistakes so you don't make the same mistake twice. And then the third trick is try to not make fatal errors. In other words, don't put yourself out there to where if it fails, the whole thing's over.
Yeah.
That you just blew the whole deal up. And so lots of little stumbles along the way, lots of things that at the time they seemed like, with all the drama surrounding them, they seemed like they were a big deal. But when you look at them in the scope of history, they're just funny.
Mm-hmm. And I think one thing that's great about what we do here is that we don't hide our mistakes. It's not something that we're not excited about it. We're not holding them up and saying, hey, we're proud of this mistake. But it's not as a company, as a group, we know where we failed, and we know, fix this, go forward. We've got to do something different about that as opposed to making the same mistake over and over again.
Well, Chris, you're exactly right. Our brand is actually based in that. I mean, the whole thing, the whole Dave Ramsey story, if you will, was, yeah. Hey, I filed bankruptcy.
That's true.
I lost everything. I did stupid with zeros on the end. And that doesn't mean that I know something about money, but that means I can relate to you if you've done something stupid. Mm-hmm. Now, what I've done since then says I know something about money.
Yes.
And so we combine that experience and the compassion that comes from that with the proven track record now of having built wealth using the principles that we teach. And the same is true in business. You know, I've done stupid things in business. That doesn't mean I'm stupid. It means that I've come along the same path you can, and I can relate to you if you've done this. This is not theory. This is not something out of the classroom. It's not, Entree Leadership was not designed in a vacuum where there's no dirt, mm-hmm. Where there's no blood, where there's no, you know, where you don't get cut, where there's no bruises. We bump into stuff, man. I mean, and we get knocked down, and it's we have fights and stuff in here, you know, and we argue and we hurt each other's feelings sometimes, and you know, but we do that on the underpinning of we're trying to win and go for excellence. But all of that, just saying, hey, that culture says it's okay to have an opinion that's wrong.
Yeah.
It's okay to make a mistake. It's okay to try something and it be a total screw up. It's okay to present a graphics package that sucks and everybody calls you out on it and laughs at you. You know, I mean, it's okay. At least you were out there trying something and it didn't kill us all when you did it. We just fix it and we go on. But it's not a culture that glorifies in mistakes, but it accepts that they're part of the process to winning.
Yeah. I love just in what you just said right there, how many times you use the term we. There wasn't I this, I that. How many times in that one section right there you said we? You did not want there to be a we when you started out. You didn't want a we. You didn't want employees. You know, back in the day, it was just you. And so I want you to do two things. One, tell how that changed. And also, when did you begin to think that you were actually a leader?
Well, I didn't want employees because my perception, having come, I mean, I grew up in the real estate business, in the construction business, and there's a lot of people in construction that do a good job, But my perception from the construction business was do as little work as you can possibly do and get home as fast as you can for as much money as you can possibly charge, you know? And so I didn't want employees. As far as I was concerned, employees are people that come late, leave early, and steal while they're there. I don't want employees. I didn't want to have to manage and try to keep up with somebody trying to mess something up all the time or trying to half-butt do something. It was easier to just do it myself. And I quickly realized that God was giving me something a whole lot bigger to do than I could do by myself. And so part of his plan in his infinite wisdom was to grow me up, go figure. And so, you know, I finally decided if I was going to put somebody on our team, if I was going to hire my first employee, I was not going to call them employees, that we were going to build a family. We were going to build a group of folks that were all striving for excellence, that had an entrepreneurial flair, an understanding that at the end of the day, we really are all self-employed. Some people think they work for somebody else, but you're really, at the end of the day, self-employed. If you only have one client, then you're working for somebody else, but you're self-employed. And so I wanted that spirit to emanate through the whole thing, and it took a while. I mean, when I first started as a leader, I was not a good leader. I knew where we wanted to go. I just didn't have the patience to get everybody to go with me, and I didn't see that it was that important. I would just leave, and then I would look back, and nobody was following. I had to go back and get them. And it was
the important part of leading people is they have to actually be behind you.
Yeah, they have to follow. Yeah, that's part of one of the indicator of leaders is they have followers. And so I really didn't do that good a job. It was so rough, and I was so tough, and I still am very blunt, but I've certainly mellowed a lot and become a little bit more diplomatic in a communication style and in process for getting people to come along. So I think it was several years. I mean, I read everything I could get my hands on. I believe in books, and I think books change your life. And so I grabbed everything I could get on business and on leadership, and I'm reading John Maxwell, and I'm reading Malcolm Gladwell, and I'm reading Seth Godin, and I'm reading Jim Collins, you know, Good to Great. Oh, my goodness, what a wonderful. All those kinds of people, and people like we've been interviewing here right on this podcast. I mean, man, we've had some rock stars on this podcast already. And I'm reading those guys, and every time I would get one of those nuggets, and I would go, okay, now that one, yeah, that one, that's real. That one really works. That's not just a book. That's a thing that works. And I would sit down and try that with our team and change a little bit of me. And so I've become a good leader. But it took a couple of decades.
One of the great things, I've been here 11 years now, and I have enjoyed being able to watch your leadership and grow from your leadership. I've watched you do things extremely well, and I've watched you make mistakes. And I think in our company, our leadership, that is one of the best things, is that it changes the way that I lead by watching you. It changes seeing you 11 years ago lead, seeing you 5 years ago lead, seeing you lead now. That has made me a different and better leader as well. But how would you describe your leadership style now? We know how you were rough when you started out. How would you say your style is now?
I think we're so efficiency driven now, with me being the product, that I sometimes struggle with slowing down enough to make sure individual people in individual situations know I do care about them, because I'm on to the next thing.
Right.
And
because you've got a couple things to do.
Well, it's my personality style too, and so the thing I'm having to concentrate more on than I used to because of time constraints is to slow down enough to make sure that the people that I'm dealing with, whoever it is, know I care. Because if you bust somebody that doesn't know you care deeply about them, they're not going to take it. You're just a butt then. Mm. I mean, you're just a boss. It's just busting on somebody. You're just a country song, you know? And so you don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be that guy.
Right.
And so I need to slow down enough. And I do a better job at that than I used to, because now it's not as desperate. Now I'm busy because there's a lot of things to do, and there's a lot of fun things on our plate, and there's a lot of activities that are all productive. And, you know, I'm running from TV appearance to stage to radio show to a leadership meeting inside of our organization to product development, something which I love working on, all those kinds of things. And so it's all fun stuff. In the old days when I was running from one thing to another, it was like freaking survival. You know, I got to go kill something, and if it don't die, we're all going down, you know? And so I had to bust into it that way. And so I have the luxury now of making sure people care. I think that's the first thing I would say about my current leadership style. I don't always do it as well because of efficiency, but I at least have that luxury and I'm aware of it. It is easier now, 20 years into this, for people to leave our organization, whether they quit and go take a better job.
It's easier for you.
Yes, emotionally. I used to grieve.
I remember the meetings. We had the meeting of death.
It was like back in the day. I would just cry. You know, it was just so, because I felt like they had given up on everything we were trying to do just because they took another job. And it wasn't that. I mean, they weren't that way. But I just, it was like, man, I tattooed my brand on your freaking arm and then you left. I mean, I don't get this. How can you? I just couldn't do it. And worse than that, if they didn't work out. And I had to fire somebody. Oh, that was just horrible. It was so hard. And I've seen so many of those stories turn out because I've remained friends with those people. I've seen so many of them turn out for their good, whether they left for their own good or whether I fired them for their own good because they were not a fit. And we talk about that a lot in the book, Entree Leadership. But I've seen so many of those stories turn out that when I sit with someone now and I'm kind and they leave our organization, I'm honestly okay with it. Mm. I'm more than okay with it. I'm almost excited about, because if it's time to leave, for them to leave here and I have to ask them to leave, it's always past time. And I know there's going to be a sense of, whew, man, we needed that one. That we need something clean in here. We need a new deal in here. That person, it was time. And I know the organization's going to have that sense. And I know this person, they didn't realize it, but they were past their time. It was time for them to do something else. And they didn't get that. And I was sitting with a lady, you know, leaving our organization that way a few weeks ago. And I just, you know, she was upset. And I understood. And I wasn't being unkind. I really see really good things for her. They weren't going to be while she was here. And she wasn't really good here anymore. And a bunch of stuff piled up that actually caused the event to happen. But philosophically, I could sit in that chair and go, I'm really not being mean to her. You know, I'm really helping her. I really, really am helping her. And so I don't grieve the way I used to. And I guess the third thing is that I'm much better at delegating. I am very good at delegating. Once I can trust someone's competency and once I trust their integrity, I leave them alone, almost to a fault. I watch the accounting and I watch their numbers and I see how they're producing. I watch their sales calls or whatever come through on the reports. But I just simply don't. I just let people run their deal. I leave them alone. And I'm such a control freak and such a hard-driving personality. For me to be able to release to that level, I think is a miracle of God. I really do.
It's a huge example of maturity more than anything. I mean, we see this all the time with people coming through Entree Leadership, that there are so many entrepreneurs and so many leaders who cannot let go because they are that control freak. And it doesn't matter what your age is, it's a huge, you know, if you don't have the maturity to be able to delegate to somebody who has that competency, then that's all you're going to be is a control freak, which again goes against leading people.
And I mean, you're just a boss then.
That's it.
You're not treating people with dignity. They're not going to grow it creatively. They're not, passion isn't going to grow. When you allow them to run their own little world, within your world, within guidelines and within the thing, and you give somebody the dignity of actually making their own freaking decisions instead of just leaning on every follicle in their hairline, oh my God, you know, it's amazing what happens. And that I attribute our unbelievable exponential growth and success in some of these areas of our brand in about the last 6 or 7 years to that one thing, to being able to attract high quality talent, retain them, encourage them, motivate them by treating them with the dignity of delegation.
You are, as any entrepreneur, you are so much the heartbeat of our company. You're so much the energy of our company. How do you feel like your leadership has driven performance here as far as anybody, whether they be in sales or administration or whatever? How do you feel like your leadership has driven people to perform at high levels? Because we do. There's no doubt about it. We are a company who performs at high levels.
One of the things I'm most proud of is our level of excellence. I mean, we really are excellent. We are not perfect. We mess up.
Right.
But we're even excellent on how we fix it when we mess up. I mean, we're good. I mean, and I'm very proud of that. And I think the thing that's driven that is Two things. One is you get people around that believe like that. Mm-hmm. That you know, if you get people around that mediocre is okay, well, you can't, you know, there's not a donkey that's going to win the Kentucky Derby. You got to put a thoroughbred in there, you know. So you got to get the right people in there in the race or they're not going to finish. It's that simple. And then you can create a sense of excellence as the standard. There's no sense in creating that sense of that being the standard with people that don't have a belief and an ability, both. They got to be fired up about it, and they've got to have that thoroughbred talent level. And then the second thing I guess we've done is we just don't tolerate anything else. I mean, one thing we will come down on your butt about around here is half butt doing something. You know, we just you don't fit in. In our organization, you just, you know, you kind of like, oh, take it easy. You know, those people don't fit in around here.
They don't last long. They
don't.
For sure.
We don't like them. They don't like us. We work too hard. You know, we got too much to do. We get fired up about winning and putting out world class stuff and all of that. And you know, people, you don't like working here much if you want to take it easy.
Yeah, you're fanatical about culture. What is it about culture that you're so fanatical about?
Bureaucrats manage with processes. Entree leaders manage with principles. Mm. Principles are not taught. They're caught. Mm. And so culture has to deliver guiding principles to people. You can't put those in a manual. Now, we have a manual. I mean, we have guiding core values and operating principles. We have those things written down because as we've repeated them over and over, our HR director, Rick Perry, has done a great job of verbalizing them and writing them out so that a new hire at least can read and do that. But that's not how they get it. The new hire reads that, and the first thing they do is, yeah, we'll see. You know, right, sure, they don't
gossip. Because they're used to where they've
been. Yeah, they're used to all that crap where everybody else has a manual and they don't do the stuff in the manual, you know. And so we actually do it, but The thing about culture for me was I figured out a long time ago we had this really good thing going with about 10 or 12 of us. I mean, the company was buzzing. It was tight. Everybody was rocking and doing their deal. It was like, you know, 10 Super Bowl champions on the same day. Every day we would show up, 10 or 15 of us. It was a cool moment. And that's when we hit the curve where we like doubled in a year. Mm-hmm. And we went to like 30 people and the personality of the company changed.
Right.
It scared the crud out of all of us because we're like, no, we want what we had back there and we just want more of it. And we went, okay, we've got a choice. We've got to influence the new people coming in or they're going to influence us. And this thing's going to get dumbed down, and it's going to become like one of those stupid companies that, you know, that people all don't want to work for. Right. And I don't want to be one of those stupid companies. No way. We're not dumbing this thing down. And so people that come in here are going to be impacted by us. And what that means is we have a culture, and we have to make sure everybody else becomes part of that culture, or they got to leave, or this whole thing's going to be messed up. Yeah. And we don't want to mess it up because we like it. And that was our core group said that out loud, and we're like, okay, so now your job when there's 300 of us now is to make sure that that next person that comes in, you know, they don't say take it easy and get away with it. They don't do gossip. They don't do the, you know, you don't clock watch and see how little you can get away with. And we get stuff done, man. We're self-employed. You know, let's get it done. And so we get that sense of urgency, that sense of entrepreneurism, that sense of a high calling on everybody that's in the place. And it either gets on you or you got to go. Mm-hmm. You can't stay because culture manages the outcome without you having to manage every individual, micromanage the activities of the individual.
It becomes self-policing.
It's self-policing. It's self-motivating. It's self-perpetuating. And it's a lot easier to manage culture and lead into culture and create this thing that you're a part of than it is to say, okay, I'm gonna micromanage and I'm gonna check everything you do and we're gonna put a clock on the wall and you have to punch the clock and you have to think, you know, and we're gonna manage you and manage you and manage you and manage you because we're so afraid you're not gonna work. Instead, we're gonna put you in an environment where if you don't work, you just look stupid because you don't fit in, you know?
The pink elephant in the room.
That's it.
The Entree Leadership is a big book coming out. I mean, you have poured so much time into this book, so much energy, so much information, and it's bigger than a normal business book. It's more pages, from my understanding, than a normal business book. Is there anything that you couldn't get in there that our listeners need to know?
Well, there's going to be 4 or 5 online chapters because we couldn't get them in the book.
Couldn't get them all in the book.
So it's the truth. That was our editing process. Okay, just put it online. Because I didn't want a tome. I didn't want something, you know, there was a doorstop. It was so big. Because a book like that's intimidating, and I don't do things that are intimidating. I want it accessible to everyone. I think the thing about Entree Leadership, the book, and this material that people really need to hear is when you read this book, you're going to be shocked. You thought you knew a lot about us, and you thought you understood the way we do things, and you do probably from a financial perspective. That chapter sure. probably won't shock you. But when you hear some of the things that we do here and the way we treat people, whether they're vendors or whether they are our staff, our team, all of those kinds of things, I think it's going to be one of those aha moments for you. It's going to catch you a little bit off guard. I've already had 2 people that I really respect read it, and they thought they knew what the book was going to be, and when they read it, they went, wow, you went places I never thought you would go. You said things in there. I mean, you opened up the curtain and really showed us how to do not only the mechanics, but the fuzzy side, the warm and fuzzy side of what you guys do with your team that the world really doesn't understand. And we show you how to do that in a way that's going to make business fun for you again. So I think it's going to catch a lot of people off guard, and I'm excited about that part of it.
Well, we cannot wait. It is coming up very soon. September 20th is the launch of the book, and then madness, tours, interviews all over the place. It's always funny to me whenever I'm about to speak somewhere, somebody comes up and says, "Are you ready?" It's like, well, of course I'm ready. Of course I'm ready. I wouldn't be doing it if I wasn't ready. I know that you're ready.
I'm past ready. This is I wanted to do this 6 months ago.
Absolutely.
It just takes a while to get with these books and all this planning stuff done. I'm excited. It's going to be 34 days of rock and roll, man.
Well, man, I appreciate this time. Thank you for giving us this time on this interview, spending time with us, with the listeners, giving us the insides of the book, inside of the company. All of that fun information. I know that this is going to change a lot of people's understanding of leadership. So thank you so much for this time.
Thanks, Chris. Great job.
Well, folks, that is the man himself, Dave Ramsey. We hope that you have enjoyed that. We hope that you've enjoyed today's interview. We hope that you've enjoyed the information and that you have pulled something out of there that is going to change your leadership. One of the things that I love that we live by around here is, like Dave said, bureaucrats are guided by processes. Leaders are guided by principles. If you want to be a great leader, you have to have great principles. You have to. You have to be a principled leader. You have to know it, and I can promise you, your team watching you will know whether or not you are as well. So, that puts another Entree Leadership podcast in the books. Folks, again, we want to hear from you. We want to hear your comments. We want to hear your questions. Follow us on Twitter, at Entree Leadership. Follow us through email, podcast@entreeleadership.com. Send us your comments. Send us your questions. We want to answer those on air. We want to answer those also on my blog at chrislocurdo.com. We want to have you as a part of this. Again, we are loving everything that we're hearing out there, and it sounds like you are absolutely loving it as well. Also, if you would like more information on Entree Leadership, if you would like to come to one of the events, if you would like to see the simulcast, the Entree Leadership 1 day, the Entree Leadership 3 day that I teach here in Nashville, the Entree Leadership 5 day that Dave does around the country, any of that information that you would like to get, make sure that you go on over to EntreeLeadership.com. And finally, I want to thank the folks that make this happen every single time. The folks in the booth, Chris Mefford, our producing genius. Producing genius? He produces genius. I don't know. He's a genius either way. Colin Fatke, our audio extraordinaire. Becky Tennell, our ambassador of awesomeness. And, of course, Dave Ramsey. Well, folks, we hope that you've enjoyed this episode. Please help us get this out to your friends, your family, those people that you know that need to hear this. Get it out to them. Let them know about this podcast and what they can get from it and what they can learn. We are excited to bring it to you every single time. And we look forward to bringing you the next Entree Leadership Podcast.
Listen up, business leaders. Dave Ramsey will be in Dallas on September 30th for Entree Leadership One Day. At this event, Dave will teach you how to build a more profitable business, manage your time, and lead a unified team free of gossip. You'll hear stories from Dave Ramsey's championship playbook that will literally change the way you do business. This is 20 years of practical business wisdom from the trenches. Don't miss it. Get your seats now at DaveRamsey.com/EntreeLeadership. That's DaveRamsey.com.
Are you ready to impact your business immediately? Then join me, Dave Ramsey, for Entree Leadership Defined, coming to a city near you this fall. In just 3 hours, I'll teach you how to build a more profitable business, manage your time, and lead a unified team free of gossip. You won't find this stuff in some college business class. This is 20 years in the trenches of leading and actually running a profitable business. I guarantee this material will change the way you view your business and your leadership. This is how our company works, and I'll share with you directly from our championship playbook. It's why we win Best Place to Work every year, and how we started this thing from a card table in my living room to a major national brand. I'll be in Phoenix, Raleigh, and Grand Rapids this fall for Entree Leadership Defined. Get your seats now at DaveRamsey.com or call 888-22-PEACE. That's 888-227-3223.